Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
This Independence Day, wrap yourself in comfort and freedom with Minky Couture. From stars, stripes, and snuggles to cozy classics, our luxury blankets are proudly made to comfort. Whether you're watching fireworks or hosting backyard barbecues, be proud to be cozy all summer long. Celebrate comfort. Celebrate freedom. Celebrate you. Shop now at MinkyCouture.com and make your 4th of July unforgettably cozy.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 339.
Y'all, if that sounded weird, I was like, try not to laugh at Carrie because she's like, you ready? I'm like, yep. And like, I go to say something and then she's like, got to move her phone. Just not even an inch.
Well, because I couldn't see the episode number and I was going 338, 338, 338. And then I moved it and I was like, 339.
Oh my God. Because she doesn't think about where she puts her phone. She just puts it.
You know what? It was quiet.
Nothing you ever do with your phone is quiet.
You know what?
Mm-hmm.
Y'all back up off me today. Colby and I started a show on Netflix called Perfect Couple.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen it?
With Nicole Kidman?
Yes.
Okay. Started it, but fell asleep. Not because it was bad, but it was just like my medicine kicked in.
Oh, y'all should have seen my face. Like, you fell asleep in it?
No, I got like... to, like, the point.
Good at
the
point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I woke up and I was like, well, gotta rewatch that. But yeah, it was like,
it's
I was
good.
Like, okay. I like the cast. I like all the things.
Basically, someone dies and then it does, like, flashbacks to show you what happened. And so you're, like, trying to figure it out and seeing people's connections with one another, yada, yada, yada.
And it's rich people, so you know they always got something going on. Which actually ties into my story.
Oh, shit.
I know, right?
We have like 2 episodes left and it's good. Like we were like, one more. And I was like, I gotta go to bed.
I can't just always listen to Sabrina Carpenter. Like Sabrina Carpenter is my gym time. Like crank it up, do all the things. But I was like, what can I watch that's going to entice me enough to be like, keep going. Like,
yeah,
I have 30 more minutes or whatever, you know, like keep going. And I was like, I don't know, but I might wait and watch The Perfect Couple then. If you were on the edge of your seat.
I wouldn't say edge of my seat, but it was good. I got like 2 episodes left, but I wouldn't say it's like a, but it is good.
Because I haven't found one of those recently.
But it's only like 6 episodes.
That'll work to get me there.
You know, the other thing you could watch is the.
If you say The Nanny, I swear to God.
No, The Secret Life of Mom Talk.
What?
Mom Talk, like TikTok, Mom Talk, like you have workout TikTok, clean talk. Mom Talk.
Uh-huh.
It's called The Secret Life of Mom Talk. And it's that group of women who are all moms and they're Mormons. And they did like the dance.
Oh, I thought that was called Mormons something.
Well, some people call it Mormon Talk, but they call it Mom Talk.
Like the actual show?
Oh, shit. Yeah, you're right. It's called.
Okay.
What is it called?
The Secret Life of Mormons.
No, I think it's called The Secret Life of Mom Talk. Hold on.
It's not.
Why do I say Mom Talk so weird?
I don't know.
I feel like I'm saying Mom Talk.
The Secret Life of Mormon Wives?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay.
That suck. Have you watched it?
No, I haven't. But that would be a good one.
It is good. 2 episodes in and shit's going down, man.
Okay. Oh, so the cleaner was there the other day and Birdie did so much better. It was only like maybe a 5 minute, like, whew, you know, touch and go thing. But then after that, perfect. Like, perfect. But she had a few things like where she had like, you know, eaten Frankenstein. And so there was like one little part of his leg that I had not got up with all the fluff and stuff. And when we were talking, Birdie had her ball that she loves And the cleaner went to bend down just to get it. She was like, oh, I don't think the vacuum will get it. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I thought I got it all. Birdie was like, the fuck you doing? And like, so she like let her smell it and she like took it, went back to her bed and like just nibbled on the little wow. leg. I was like, okay. And so like we had to wait till she was doing, like I was throwing the ball and then she like went and got it and like went to throw it away. And Birdie was watching her the entire time. I was like, she's too smart. Like, she knows.
Yeah, because she's stealing her soul. Have y'all seen this dog's fucking eyes? Meanwhile, that's a choking hazard.
But she doesn't, like, chew it in her mouth. It's very weird. She just likes to, like, on that kind of stuff, she shreds it.
Well, y'all listen to my shenanigans. Okay, y'all know we had a hurricane a-coming, and then it was nothing. I mean, like, we had rain and okay. Donna's power went out for a while.
I was going to say, okay, maybe to you, it was nothing.
Well, I mean, do you see the leaves? Not leaves. Well, what are they? I don't know. Shrubs yeah. in my yard that are everywhere?
Oh, girl, I know. I was like, ooh, mine's worse, but not. I was like, okay, hers. Her yard's still like this,
oh, too. I know. I'm like coming home from work, and I see all the people have already cleaned up their fucking yards. I'm like, how do you have time?
Yeah.
Like, what? How do you have time? Because I'm not surrounded by all retired people.
Right.
I mean, some, yes. But like, and my lady next door, if like that happens and like a couple of branches fall in our yard, she actually usually picks ours up. And Colby got home before me. And then we went to eat like before I even came home. And I was like, did our next door neighbor pick up our stuff? And he was like, no. I was like, damn it. Anywho's it's. So we had a storm that's coming or came. And it went like kind of up by New Orleans, and we're about 100-ish miles east of that. So east side of a hurricane's the worst. So it was like, oh, this could be bad. So got to get gas before it gets bad, just in case you got to, like, that's rule number one when a hurricane is coming, fill up your gas tank. So the other night, came home, had gone to pickleball after work, got me some food, stopped to get gas. So you know there's cars everywhere waiting to get gas. Well, in true Toyota fashion, because I have a Toyota 4Runner, the locks tend to go out on the 4Runners. Or, oh. Well, all of them. No, it's not going where you think it's going. I didn't lock myself out. Literally every Toyota I know, this happens to. Colby's is doing it right now, all the things. Anyway, so it will lock, and then when you want to unlock it, it won't unlock. Or sometimes it doesn't lock at all, and it just stays unlocked. Well, my passenger side door does it really bad. I was going to put my money back in while the gas was pumping, and I, you know, rolled the window down over there so I could reach in and open that side of the door, put my money back in my thing. And while I was doing something, I accidentally hit the lock button.
Oh my God. Imagine that.
And I was like, oh, you know, waiting on me to get finished, pump my gas, nothing when I try to open my driver's side door. So I was like, shit, it's locked. Well, it's a 4Runner. I can't just reach, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck. So I go around to the other side, open it, put my knee down like on the floorboard to like try to reach across. That's a no-go. So I crank it and I had an umbrella. I reach across with the umbrella, hit the window down button, go back around, get back in. I was like, sorry, sorry, sorry. She's like, it's okay. Look at my knee from my floorboard.
Oh my God.
Colby said, the fuck happened to your knee? I was like, that's from my floorboard.
Oh my God.
Because I have fake WeatherTech floor mats. So
if you don't know what those are, it's like the rubber kind.
Yeah, it's like plastic so that, you know, you spill a drink, it doesn't get all over the carpet. I was like, damn, I got like a
rug burn?
No, it's like a wound.
Yeah, it's deep. It's actually yes. pretty deep.
I was like, wow, that wasn't even a fun reason to get a knee scratch.
Oh my God. All I can think about is all the times that you've had that back scratcher and you used it
yes.
as your like extension on your arm. It was all for this one part. Mm-hmm.
I had to hit it a couple of times. Because of course, like it's automatic, but uh-huh. if you got to hit it hard to make it automatic. So I was like,
yes.
And like, of course, it's somebody's waiting on you. Now I got to dance. And this was, what day was this? Tuesday that we did? Yeah, this is Tuesday. So this is a two-day-old wound that you're looking at.
Oh, my God. Also, I know the place that you were at, so I know it was packed.
It was one of those gas stations, like, right outside Walmart. So you know those things are always hopping because it's always the cheapest.
Yes.
And I use my Walmart Plus and get an extra 10 cents off, and Donna uses it, too.
You know? It does really help. I don't use it if I just have, if it's, like, half a tank or whatever.
Why?
Because usually you're, like, at work, and I'm like, okay. But like when I have to fill it all the way up, yeah. I'm like, Carrie, what are you doing? Can I get that code?
Okay, one more thing to make this about me. So this is, okay, we record on Thursdays when we record the main episode. And this weekend, I'm going to Lake Charles to one, watch the new Beetlejuice movie with my sister, which y'all already knew about. But two, I'm getting a new dog. I mean, unless I'm being scammed, but pretty sure it's not a scam.
So, yeah.
My sister texted me, I don't know, a week ago, I guess. And it was a picture from one of my niece's old preschool teachers. And she needed to rehome an English bulldog, a little girl. Never had a girl dog in my life. So anyway.
But she's been saving a name for years.
I literally have been saying for at least a year, maybe two, that if I got a girl dog, I would name her Maisie. This dog's name is Sassy, but I'm changing it to Maisie. If I'm not getting scammed. Stay tuned to next week and you'll find out.
That's hilarious.
Or if you're in the Facebook group, I'll post a picture of her. But so she needed to rehome her because like she has three English bulldogs and a Frenchie dog. And she's going to start keeping her grandkids at home. And she's like four dogs and like two toddlers, too much. She needed to rehome this one. She's only two. I am going to have to get her fixed, but I had to do that with Jax too. And I really think it's going to help Jax because he's got a little bit of separation anxiety that's, you know, when he pees on things. So I'm hoping it will help with that. But I'm really excited. She's little bitty, though. She's only like 45 pounds.
Dang.
Yeah, she's little.
Not for long.
Well, also, she did say, like, one negative thing about the dog is she doesn't walk well on a leash. Like, she was like, we have to carry her into the vet.
Oh, Lord.
So when we're meeting Sunday morning. And so when we meet, she was like, she's not going to be able to get on the ground because like she won't walk on a leash. So we're going to have to just like pick her up and switch cars.
That's hilarious. Don't drop her.
You know what? I'm not. She'll be fine if I do. No, I'm not.
Well, but just another story.
But I am excited. I was kind of nervous at first. Like, I was gung-ho for it because it also, like, literally just fell in my lap because, like, wait, I really am going to Lake Charles this next weekend so I could pick her up, you know, all the things. So, like, it really does work. But then I was like, God, a second dog. Like, that's going to be a lot. Because, you know, when mom's dog's here, it's just two fucking bulldogs following you around and it's loud and they're big and they're slobbery and hairy. Ugh. And you know, it's just, it's a big decision. And Colby has been like pumped this whole time.
Yeah.
And he's super excited. He's like, she's going to be mine because Jax loves you more. So she's going to be mine. And I've never had a girl dog. And so he's like, you know, female dogs tend to like males better. Like when it's their dog or whatever. And then boy dogs tend to like the females better. And so he's like, so Jax is yours and she's mine. But we'll see. And she's used to having dogs because she's been into a house with like multiple bulldogs. Yeah. So I think it'll be good for her coming into a house with another dog. And I really think it's going to be good for Jax because he is just such a loving dog to other.
Yeah.
And he just loves to play and stuff. So I think it's going to be good for both of them.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Right. And also good for y'all because we might be starting some videos and stuff.
I know. I was really thinking about how, like, man, that would be so cute if we could get some good videos of them for, like, TikToks and stuff of, you know, because some of those are my favorite when it's, like, brother and sister bulldogs and, like, one's annoying to the other.
Okay. No.
No.
What? I fucking love you, Carrie.
What were you going to say?
Me and you.
Oh, what are we doing videos about?
Because we're going to be doing remote.
Oh, yeah, because Donna's allergic to dogs, and so.
Because two bulldogs, too much.
When we have my mom's dog, she can't, like, come eat dinner with us and stuff, so.
Yeah.
I did say, well, I guess I kind of said, are you cool, Donna? I didn't, like, ask, but no, I, like, mentioned it.
You said, Donna's not excited because she's, and I was like,
well, okay, that
I
was
am.
Like, that was like a, you know, hey, are you cool?
And I said, it's your life, it's your thing, like. And I just recently learned that, and I don't know if this is a fact, but I learned from my coworker that having a second dog is good for your dog. And so, I mean, like, I've even said that I was looking maybe if, like, Birdie and I can get on her, you know, like, training and stuff to have another little dog.
So we'll see. Y'all could find out next week I was scammed.
I don't think so.
No, because we've been like texting too.
Yeah. But I understand like this. I had the same fear with Birdie.
But I even asked her today, like, okay, can we meet Sunday morning because we'll be driving back? So I was like, because my niece is like, I want that dog, you know? So I got to at least go back to my sister's house and let them see. But I didn't want to take that dog out of its house, make it spend the night in an unknown house to then bring it to another unknown house. So I was like, I probably need to get her Sunday morning, let the kids see her, and then just come home. And then come home early enough that she and Jax can kind of acclimate a little bit before we go to work the next day.
Yeah. I'm excited to see him. But also, yes, I'm excited for those kind of videos.
Yeah, but I don't think that's going to be a thing. But, you know, I have hopes. Well, before we get into Donna's story, we got to talk about Miracle Maid. Y'all, I am so excited to get into bed tonight because tonight will be my first night back in my Miracle Maid sheets because it had been laundry time. And I'm so excited because while they weren't on, I woke up hot and sticky, and I will not do that tonight.
For sure. I'm jealous because I put on some Halloween ones, and they're not Miracle Maid quality. I will tell you that. Why? Because it does not regulate my body temperature throughout the night like Miracle Maid sheets do. And I don't know why we haven't done this yet, but we are both getting a second pair of Miracle Maid sheets.
It's literally been on my to-do list forever, and I just hadn't done it. Like you've heard us say time and time again, Miracle Maid sheets are inspired by NASA, and they use silver-infused fabrics that make them temperature-regulating so that you sleep at the perfect temperature all night. So whether you sleep hot or you sleep cold, the sheets will help you sleep at the right temperature.
Also, traditional bed sheets, they harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat, y'all, which can lead to acne, allergies, stuffy noses. It's just gross.
And if you are trying to live your best skin journey, sleeping on that bacteria-ridden pillowcase is going to clog your pores. It can cause breakouts and acne. So you can sleep clean with Miracle Maid.
Why? Because Miracle Maid sheets offer a whole line of self-cleaning antibacterial bedding. And that's sheets, pillowcases, comforters, and it prevents up to 99.7% of bacteria growth.
So you can sleep in these sheets for longer without having to wash as often, like 3 times less. And these sheets are good quality. You've heard us talk about how much we really do enjoy them. We've had friends that have them to tell us that when they've been on vacation, that they've been like, oh, I want to go home because I need my sheets. So if you want to get in on this Miracle Maid action because it truly has impacted both of our sleep for the better, head over to trymiracle.com/creep and you can get the Miracle Maid sheets for 40% off. And if you use the promo code creep at checkout, you'll get a 3-piece towel set for free and save an extra 20%.
Miracle Maid is so confident in their product, it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if for some reason you are not 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund.
Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Maid. Go to trymiracle.com/creep and use the code creep to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40%.
Again, that's trymiracle.com/creep. C-R-E-E-P. To treat yourself.
Thank you, Miracle Maid, for sponsoring this episode. Well, before we get into Donna's story, we're going to talk about Patreoners. Thank you so much, Heather B. from Ohio.
Lindsay P. from Missouri.
And Lorreen S. from, we don't know. So if you want an extra episode a week and your letters and your thank you cards and all of that, head on to patreon.com/theapcpodcast. Sign up and get your shit today. And Lorreen, we need your address so we can send you all that shit.
Yes, please. Okay, you know how we say often the scariest stories are your stories because they're true?
Well, I almost stopped you there and said, no, I never say often because the T is silent.
We've looked this up before, ma'am, and it said both are correct.
But mine is corrector.
Okay. Well, I'm dipping my toe in Carrie's pond again. This story is about James S. Jameson, who was the heir to the Irish Whiskey Company. Picture it. Africa, 1888. Remember that show Drunk History?
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be like Donna's history, where I'm not drunk. I just am really not a history teacher. Okay.
Meanwhile, that's literally what you went to college for, but I digress.
You know what? That was a decade ago. So more than a decade ago.
15 years ago.
15 years. Yeah. See, totally different now. So in Africa, specifically Uganda, there was this uprising against a man who went by Emin. And there was this part of Africa that was like owned by Leopold II of Belgium. And he was like, oh, we got to help that man out because like they're trying to like do a mutiny. So they did this undercover mission to rescue Emin. And it was called the Emin Pasha Relief Expedition. So it had some military men. And then also for shits and giggles, some wealthy people paid to tag along. And it just reminds me, again, that rich people will pay to go on like life-threatening, thrill-seeking trips. And one of those rich people was James Jameson. So they arrived in the Congo and it was a shit show from the start. Not all of the ships or supplies were there because someone didn't send word that they had left to go there.
Oh, holy shit.
Right, which is like what I picture is me falling asleep when I was trying to text on Snapchat, but then, you know, like sending the video on accident or whatever, me sleeping. But like this is way worse because we don't know why or how word wasn't reached, but it didn't get there. But I just feel like someone was doing something and they're like, oh, let me do something else real quick. And then, oh, fuck, didn't send that telegraph. Or whatever, telegram, whatever.
Well, I was going to say, like, how did they even send word, too? It's not like they could just quickly be like, oh, shit, I forgot to call. Let me call. Yeah. Them
right. However, the leader of this whole expedition, Henry Morton Stanley, was like, we're not quitters, so we're rescuing him. So he split the large group into two smaller groups. So he had the rescue group, who was mostly his military troops, and then the other was called the rear guard. They were staying there to wait for the food, the supplies, the ships. And so it was a lot of the wealthy people, but also some of the troops, too, so they could protect them, right? And, you know, it's like, of course, they're the rear guard because they're, like, paying for this. And so they can say, like, oh, we went on this expedition, but they're just, like, hanging back.
Right.
Waiting for this stuff, right? But then also putting these other people in danger, probably being stupid, right?
You know what that reminds me of? I saw a TikTok the other day that this guy was like, if you make more than $150,000 a year, you should not ever be on a ladder. Like, you should always pay someone to do all the work for you that requires a ladder. You make too much to risk that. And so people were roasting him in the comments, being like, so people who make less than you, like, their safety and lives don't matter.
Right.
Like, just because you make that much doesn't mean you're better than anyone else. And so you deserve safety and they don't. And then a lot of people are like, what about those of us who make $150,000 a year on a ladder? Like, you know, tradesmen and all of that or offshore or whatever. It did not go how he thought it would.
Also, if any of those people who commented that they make $150,000, if they want to meet me, I am available.
They don't.
Also, the thing about this expedition is, yeah, it was to like rescue this guy, but that was just kind of how they got into it because it was really just for Belgium to settle more of the Congo and, you know, keep enslaving people and all the terrible things that they were doing in Africa at that time. But if we know anything about rich men and private islands, nothing good goes down. And this wasn't a private island, but this is what the king was kind of wanting it to be by any means necessary. But first, let me tell you the comedy of errors. And it's not really errors because people died, but it's just, again, this was a shit show. So we'll talk about what happened and then we'll get into the nitty gritty gross stuff. So Henry Stanley and his men went through the jungle to try to find Emin. Now, many of them don't make it because of environment, hunger, sickness, and others were killed by locals that attacked them at various times with like poison arrows, all of the things. So Henry is almost by his damn lonesome at this point, but he's not giving up at all. He kept traipsing around the jungle, and lo and behold, a man stumbled on Henry.
Oh my God.
Right. So it's like in Ever After when she had to rescue herself and the king was like, I was coming to rescue you or whatever. And it's like, fancy meeting you here. I had to just fucking rescue myself.
Yeah.
So a man had some supplies, helped Henry out, but the two were basically me and you, and they were arguing back and forth. Henry was like, all right, come on. Like, a lot of people have died to get you back. And Amin was like, one, I didn't ask that. And two, I don't want to go back. I don't want to leave the Congo. So this continued for a while. And we're not talking about like minutes or hours. This was like days and weeks and shit. So meanwhile, Henry sends word back to the rear guard and was like, hey, found him. Like, he doesn't want to come, but I'm trying, y'all. But the response he got back from the rear guard, again, this is like weeks after, you know, nothing's fast back in the 1880s. It was like, we're not good and we need help.
Oh, shit.
Because there was really hardly any survivors of the rear guard at this time. Like, only one guy who was like relaying all of this information. But most were taken captive, killed, or they were actively dying from sickness or hunger, because it's been like a year since they've seen each other because they've been on this mission.
Well, also, people think you can just go into places with no consequences. And it's like, just like that story I did of the people on that island who had never had anybody from the outside. And it's like, okay, yeah, now you're coming and bringing in all your fucking diseases. Well, same thing if you go in and you don't have their diseases. Like, right. It's a fucking risk.
Right. And it's like completely different weather and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. The environment is completely different. So throughout that time, that year that they hadn't seen each other, the rear guard, they were having their own fun in terrible ways. Now, we know this because James kept a journal of their shenanigans and their traveling. They would kidnap women and children from local tribes and then basically ransom them back to their tribe for food.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. And then they also treated the Zanzibari soldiers who were helping them like they were their guides. Like they were the enslaved people, and they beat them really badly and just were not nice people. Now, before I keep going, it's going to be kind of whiplash to get all of this in, but let me tell you that Henry's actions basically made Emin side-eye him, and then Emin's own people turned on him too. And so, like, they were then, like, enemies became friends, mm-hmm. you know, because we're the only two that got each other. But then there was another wave of people sent to relieve the relievers, basically, because Leopold's like, what the fuck is taking so long? But only a few made it back home alive, and Emin and Henry ended up being two of those men. Now, just when you think they're going to like duel it out and like finally like, okay, we're back home. We could be enemies again. Emin got drunk and walked out of a second story window and had to be rushed to the hospital. And while he was laying up in the hospital, hoping that he was okay, Henry made a run to Britain to get away. So like he wasn't going to be caught in the crosshairs of when Amin was mended, okay? But when he got home, he was expecting some fanfare and stuff, like, we rescued this person, all the things. But they weren't welcomed with open arms because more than half the people have died. And in their quest for Amin, the reign of terror that the rear guard did, like, because just like you said, they unknowingly killed off whole tribes because of their common sicknesses not being common to the tribes.
Wow.
You know, they didn't have the same immunities. And they were going in there just doing their thing selfishly. And so people were like, you just killed innocent people and it's not a good look. But then word got out about the rear guard, specifically James Jameson. Now, remember, he's like the third generation of Jameson. And they're a big deal. And everyone knows him, super rich, super all the things. So now we're back to his story. And this is where it gets more gruesome. At one point, the rear guard met up with a slave trader. And James was like, you know, back home, everyone says there's cannibals over here, but I don't believe them. Like, what say you about that, sir? And according to Asad Faran, who was James' interpreter there, this is when James said, well, he wanted to see if it was true. Like, if it's true, if there's cannibals, I want to see it. So the slave trader was like, okay, I'm going to go talk to the leader, went over to the tribe leader and told him, like, okay, this is what this guy wants. And they're like, bet. What you have to do, though, like, because you don't want them to eat you, you need to offer a gift to that other tribe over there, not ours, but that other tribe over there, and they'll give you someone, like barter for someone, and we'll show you. And so James was like, okay. He offered up 6 handkerchiefs, and he was stunned when they accepted, right? He's like, oh, okay. Or appalled, who knows? But then out comes this 10-year-old girl, and they present her to him. Now, this is from Asad again, but this is verbatim. Like, what is that? Quote, like, this is a quote. On reaching the native huts, the girl, who was led by the man who had brought her, was presented to the cannibals. The man told them, this is a present from the white man. He wants to see how you eat her.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And then Asad continued to describe what happened. He said the girl was taken to a tree and her hands wrapped around and tied around the trunk. And there were about 5 locals or natives who like sharpened their knives. And like, I can only imagine just like taunting, you know, like just waiting. And when they were finished, one man marched up to the girl and stabbed her 2 in the stomach. Now, we know this by both Asad and James's journals that the girl didn't scream, but she looked around for help and no one helped her, which just breaks my heart because, you know, wherever she was at was bad, too. If she didn't scream, if she didn't do that, like, what else did she have to endure before this? So after the guy stabbed her 2, finally her body slumped over. That's when all the locals approached her with their own knives and started cutting off body parts, whatever they could take. Now, this is another direct quote from Asad. He said, one cut a leg, another an arm, another the head and breast, another took the inner parts of her belly. After the meat was divided, some took it to the river to wash it and others went straight to their house. During all the time, Mr. Jameson held a notebook and a pencil in his hand, making rough sketches of the scene. Then Asad said that when it was over, James went back to his tent to finish his sketches, but he said he was going to like finish them with watercolor. Like, this is a whole fucking art project that he's doing over here. Now, like I said, James wrote about this in his journal and all of their other doings that they did. But one of the lines from his journal reads, quote, 3 men then ran forward and began to cut the body of the girl. Finally, her head was cut off and not a particle remained, each man taking his piece away down to the river to wash it. But James told his wife in a letter everything that happened, right? But he said it was just a really big, bad misunderstanding. He said that he offered the handkerchiefs as a joke, but once they stabbed and dismembered her, there was nothing he could do but watch.
Oh, I'm sure.
And yeah, because if you think about it, it's like all I could do was watch and then sketch it. And right. Not only the killing, but the dismemberment, the preparing the parts to cook, the cooking. And also while they ate the 10-year-old girl, he sketched all of that. And how do we know this? Is because he sketched it all. Like every moment, like every fucking scene of this, he sketched. And it's like, oh, I just guess you were so disgusted that you were also inspired to be the Bob Ross of the Congo.
Yes.
But as Taylor Swift says, karma is my boyfriend. And as Chapel Roan says, her kink is karma. James got his. Now, he didn't get eaten, but He got bit, and that fucked him up. You remember how men were dying from sickness? James was one of them. He was getting aid in Bengala, I think is how you say it, because he had contracted the sleeping sickness, which, you know, is like a parasitic infection from being bitten from that tsetse fly. And no one really survived. Like, maybe one or two people, but, like, it was basically a death sentence when you knew that you had that. It was like, there's nothing they can do.
Yeah.
So he died a slow, painful death there in the hospital in Bengala. Now, word got back about all that happened. And James's widow was like, oh, no, no, no. That's not at all what happened. James wrote a letter from his deathbed to me explaining everything. And so she published this letter. And what the letter said is that it happened so fast that he was powerless to stop it. And it was so terrible and yada, 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 yada.
I'm sure he did.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, the letter still had the bit about the six hankies and stuff. And it was like, okay, he did it as a joke, but why would you poke the bear and then not stop it and stuff? Like, why would you do that? So it didn't really clear his name because people were like, well, that is lining up with what Assad has said, but he's just saying like, oh, I couldn't stop it, you know, but like you did all the things. You set the dominoes in motion and then just watched. So then James's widow even edited his journal before they had to release that to the public so it wouldn't be as bad.
Wow.
So soon after that, Assad withdrew his statement saying, oh, sorry, I was just confused about everything. But everyone saw through that because it was definitely something, you know, that smelled like intimidation, coercion by the powers that be, you know, who funded the whole trip, a.k.a. the king. So they buried James Jameson without ever pressing charges against him or even publicly declaring what he had done. However, there was no other civilian expeditions to Africa after that. You know, all it took was six handkerchiefs and a 10-year-old girl to be brutally murdered for them to think that was a bad idea.
That's fucking awful.
Terrible. And so there's no, like, supernatural thing with that, but it's that as a person, you can be that evil. And also, like, here's the thing about how he's like, oh, I thought it was a joke. The thing is, and what I can just imagine is, like, if you stumble upon the dark web, and this person is up there and it's like, press this to like make me stab her. Like, give me money here and I'll stab her. You wouldn't be like, oh, I think this is a joke. Let me just do it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do it, right? Like, unless you wanted that to happen. Unless you were like, oh, fuck yeah. Like, this is what I've been wanting. You know, like, uh-huh. I heard about it, all the things. Then you do it. But if you truly weren't after that, you wouldn't do it. On the off chance it's real.
Right.
Hell, on the off chance that it's the FBI watching you and you just click this button and they're going to come get you or whatever, you know. But he did this. You know, he wanted that. And another thing, too, is that they said that they had come across a cannibalistic tribe before. So James knew
what was going to happen.
What was going to happen, what this was going to do, you know. And maybe he didn't know it was a 10-year-old girl that was going to happen, but, like, he didn't say no. Or even, like, oh, you're going to get a person? Cool, I want the old guy. You know, like, he didn't say anything. He was just, like, fucking excited that he gets to draw this shit. And I think he really thought, like, it was going to show them in a bad light. Like, when he got back, it was going to be, like, look at the brutality of these people. And, you know, like, this is why we have to conquer them and enslave them, because this is what they do to people. Meanwhile, it's like, it's not going to play out how you think it is.
Right.
Because you fucking watched and took notes, drew pictures.
Yeah. This didn't turn out how you thought it was going to.
Right. And I'm just like, oh, God. And I understand the widow being like, fuck, I've got to try to save face or whatever. But also, it just sucks because back in the day, women were nothing. So you couldn't have been like, that's him. That ain't me. Like, I think he's a terrible person. Like, all the things, because then she has nothing. But it's all about, like, self-preservation. And it just, that's an ugly thing too. And oh, it just gets me.
Seems like in the end he got though.
He did. That teensy fly said, okay.
Little teensy weensy fly.
But I just can't even imagine. Like, just reading that is like, oh, it makes my stomach hurt.
Yeah.
And this guy was drawing this and stuff. And so, like, he wasn't, like, the sketches aren't just, like, a fucking stick figure or whatever. Like, it's like he was drawing one of his French girls.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like, you're watching every moment, her, like, how her muscles move, all, you know, all of that. And it's like, that is too much. But he was rich and thought he was going to be able to do whatever he wanted because they're over in the Congo, you know, like
no witnesses,
all of that. And it's like your true evilness comes out when you think you can get away with it and like no one's going to know. And that's fucking scary.
But the thing is that it's always going to come out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It might take a little bit, but it will come out. So it was a shorter one, but when I saw this, I was like, wait, what? Because you know where I got it from? AllThat'sInteresting.com. That's where I saw it. And so then, like, I went on a, you know, a whole thing about it.
Love that fucking website.
I know. It really does have all that's interesting.
Okay, well, my story is going to piss you off so bad.
Oh, Lord. Like, it's bad when I do a story about cannibalism and she's like, this story's going to piss you off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, because I know it will then.
It came from a recommendation in the email from Halamna. I've gone back and forth about how to tell this story, because it's like, as soon as you start telling part of it, you kind of have to tell the next part so that you're not like jumping way ahead. But I think I got how I want to tell you. So before we get any further, we got to talk about Babel. Y'all know that Donna and I, one thing we have in common, we have trouble talking. We talk a lot. She talks a lot. But sometimes we can't even get English right. But we try hard. And Babbel makes it so much easier to start learning a new language. It keeps us working on our pronunciation with games and podcasts and classes and all the things in a very user-friendly app. And y'all know I love a game.
It's very user-friendly. Did y'all know that 1 in 5 of us has learned a new language on our bucket list? Not sure what's up with the other 4, but if you're that one person, make this your year to finally learn a new language with Babbel.
Look, we're more than halfway through the year, but there's still time for this to be one of your goals before the end of the year. Because with Babbel, you can start speaking a new language in less than 3 weeks. No more holding yourself back when you travel because you're like, I don't speak the language. What if I need to find the bathroom? All the things. With Babbel, you, like I said, 3 weeks. It's not long.
And Babbel is a science-backed language learning app that gets you talking. Babbel's 10-minute lessons are super quick and handcrafted by over 200 language experts.
With over 16 million subscriptions sold, something is going right over at Babbel. But if you do it because you're like, man, I want to travel, I want to be able to order food, again, like me, you're like, I got to know how to ask for the bathroom, all the things, and you try it and you don't like it, that's cool, because they offer a 20-day money-back guarantee with no pressure. Babbel offers 14 award-winning language courses, so there's something for everyone. And right now, for a limited time deal, you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription when you go to babbel.com/creep.
Again, you get up to 60% off at babbel.com/creep. That's spelled babbel.com/creep, C-R-E-E-P.
Rules and restrictions may apply. It's a limited time deal for our listeners when you go to babbel.com/creep. Okay, picture it. We're heading over to Henrietta, Oklahoma.
I didn't know there was an Oklahoma. I just knew there was a Georgia.
You just didn't know the whole state existed?
The Henrietta part.
Okay, so picture it. It's May 1st, 2023. There were two teens, Brittany Brewer, who was 16, and Ivy Webster, who was 14. Now, they were spending the night with one of their friends, Tiffany, over the weekend. This wasn't the first time that the girls had stayed with their friend, and their friend had stayed at their house multiple times. Like, the kids were very close. The parents kind of knew each other, but, you know, they weren't BFFs, but the kids really were. Now, the kids had plans on Saturday, and then they spent the night Saturday night, and then they were supposed to be home on Sunday. So, they did their plans on Saturday. The girls were, like, Snapchatting their parents up until about midnight on Saturday. And then one of the girls texts their mom on Sunday morning to be like, hey, we're going to go swimming at this ranch in McAllister, which was, like, nearby. Later, Tiffany's stepdad, Jesse, called to say, hey, we're at the ranch. The girls, we have terrible signal. We'll get them home as soon as we can. And the mom was like, cool, keep us posted. Well, they were supposed to be home around 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock came and went, and the girls never showed up back home. Now, some stuff says that an Amber Alert was issued, but then some stuff is, like, very clear it was not an Amber Alert. It was a missing and endangered alert. Don't really know the difference. I'm not sure, but some stuff, because there are some errors in this case. And so some people are like, the paperwork isn't even consistent on which type of alert was broadcast, because some stuff's like, everything says Amber Alert, but it wasn't even actually an Amber Alert. Like, you can't even get your documentation correct on what alert went out. So that's why I wanted to point that out. But either way, an alert went out that the two girls, Ivy and Brittany, were missing. It was because of that alert that their parents learned that Jesse McFadden, the stepdad, was a sex offender on the registry.
Oh, shit.
They had no idea that the stepdad that they had sent their teenage girls to spend time with at that house was a sex offender that was supposed to be on the registry.
Oh my God. But I mean, like, was he not on the registry?
So I think he was. There's more to it. But one podcast I listened to said that he was on the federal registry and not the state. That podcast was called Murder with the Misses. It's like, I think it's a husband and wife. Anyway, they said that they kind of explained it like that, but that was also the only place I heard that. So I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure to answer that.
Okay, so this is random, but one of my coworkers, we were all on Zoom, and they got a knock at the door, and it was a police officer, and, like, they left something. And so we were like, you got to go see what it is. Like, what is it? And it was saying that they were going to do, like, a SWAT thing down the road. So, like, just be aware that, like, this is going down, like, in a week or so. And I was like, one, never knew that. Like, it was, like, a testing thing.
Oh, they were, okay, they were running a SWAT test.
Yeah.
Okay, I was like, what? Let me tell all the neighbors I'm going to go get this guy in a week.
Yeah, no, sorry. But, like, a test, you know? But I was like, one, did not know that existed.
Yeah.
Like, I just figured it would be, like, out somewhere, like, in a building somewhere. But that got us to think about, like, have you ever looked at the sex offender registry near you or whatever? And so we all looked, and it was, like, wild, like, what it was. But you know that my area, like, our area was the only one with a woman on it?
Really?
Like, locally, you know what I mean, around our stuff. But I was like, that's just unusual.
We know that the girls were last seen with that family, but they don't have, like, a search warrant to be able to go into the house. So police go to the land that I'm just going to call them the McFadden family, even though most of them had different last names, but that the McFadden family was living on. It was like 100 acres, but they could go knock on the door, but if nobody answered or whatever, they really didn't have much they could do.
Now, is this the ranch that they were at, or this is their home?
Yeah, they never even made it to the ranch.
Oh.
So that was the other thing. Never made it to the ranch. Well, police, I'm going to skip ahead just a little bit because I don't want to give something away before I give something away. The police ended up getting a warrant to search the property. So Jesse McFadden was married to Holly Giss. Holly was 35 and she had three kids, 17-year-old Raleigh Elizabeth Allen, 15-year-old Michael James Mayo, and 13-year-old Tiffany Dore Giss. And the friends were there to be with Tiffany. When police get there, they find the bodies of the entire family, along with Ivy and Brittany.
Oh my gosh.
Holly and Michael and Tiffany were found together. And then Riley and Ivy and Brittany were found almost like a quarter of a mile away. So it's interesting, why was Riley with Ivy and Brittany? Like, why wasn't Tiffany? All the victims had been shot 1 to 3 times in the head with a gun owned by Holly, because Jesse wasn't allowed to own a gun because he had been convicted as a sex offender. So she bought the gun essentially for him. Jesse was also on the property and had died by suicide with one gunshot wound. So what happened from here was essentially law enforcement just wiped their hands of it, because they were like, okay, we've got all the bodies. We know that they were killed and we know that Jesse did it. And so it pretty much ended there as far as their investigation. And the families were like, abso-fucking-lutely not.
Right.
This cannot end here. Like, they did a search of the house and came back with, like, just a few things. I mean, they really didn't even take a lot as far as evidence. And then within 3 days, had turned the house back over to the landlord. And the landlord was basically like, hey, to the family of the victims, like, if you want to come get any of their stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, you need to come get it, or it's all going in the dumpster. Because the, like I said, the police were like, it's done. It's not an active crime scene anymore because we know who did this.
But also, how do they know that Jesse did it?
Because they know. Oh, okay. So the thing that really piqued police interest about, we got to go search, because Jesse had a court date on Monday that he didn't show up for. And so that helped police get a warrant to be like, well, he's not shown up and they're missing. They were last seen with him and they were able to get a warrant. Ivy Webster's family was a huge proponent in getting this stuff moved forward. And her family comes up a lot in that they really worked to get legislation changed. So we're going to go back a little bit. It's 2003, and Jesse McFadden gets convicted of first-degree rape. He had raped a 16-year-old girl by pinning her down, strapping her down, and holding her hostage essentially with a knife, and raping her so viciously that she is not even able to have kids.
Oh my gosh. And how old was he?
Like 19, I think.
Ugh.
So he gets sentenced to like 20 years in prison. But he starts getting time off for good behavior. You know, stuff like taking classes, all the things. He starts getting time off for this good behavior. The girl's name was Crystal Strong, and strong she fucking was, because again, she was only 16. When she found out that he potentially could get out for good behavior, she called everyone that she could think of. She called the jail. She says that she left voicemails and all the things, because she's like, y'all, you cannot let him out of prison early. Like, you cannot fucking let him out. Once he was released, because he got 3 years of good behavior, so he only served like around 15 years. That's when he met Holly and married her. But here's the thing. He was so manipulative and, well, all the things, that Holly knew about his conviction, even though she had kids the same age of his victim. She knew that he had just served all this time in prison, but he played it off like it was all a misunderstanding, like this didn't really happen.
Yeah.
Even to the point where he paid a girl to act and meet Holly and say that she was his victim And that it was all a misunderstanding and that she tried to get the charges dropped and all of that.
Oh, my God.
So the level of manipulation and all of that. And I think that Holly had some of her own issues, too. I don't know if she had any issues with drugs, but drugs will come up in a little bit. And I do know at one point the kids like lived with their grandma because Holly kind of couldn't deal with it right then. So she just seems like the perfect victim for someone like Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was looking for, I'm sure, well, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but it seems like she was looking for someone to kind of just help her get through life. And if she was having her own issues, he knew what he was looking for in a victim to be like, I'm going to con you into marrying me.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Jesse was not good at all when he was in prison. I think this was about 3 years before he got out. Jesse had a contraband cell phone. And Jesse texts this number one day trying to reach one of his buddies. And he ends up reaching a girl named Caitlin Babb.
Oh, gosh.
Now, Caitlin was a young teenager who had just moved with her grandparents and was just lonely. And, you know, the whole he texts and is like, oh, you got the wrong number, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But they just started talking.
Well, it's like a meet cute, you know,
yes.
Especially when you're lonely and, you know, all of that. Totally.
Yes.
And it's not like he's saying, hey, like, this is all my backstory right now.
Right. Well, and again, clearly we see how good of a manipulator he mm-hmm. is based on what he did to Holly. He completely downplays what he's in prison for and is like, again, it's just a misunderstanding. It's just a blah, blah, blah. And she's 16 at the time. And he knows she's 16
mm-hmm.
because he literally asked her to prove that she's 16.
No.
She sent him a picture of her learner's permit.
Oh, my God.
Because she didn't have a driver's license. So, of course, as they talk more and more, it becomes very sexual in nature. He starts asking for pictures and all the things. And she thinks that they're in love. She thinks that this is it for her, that he loves her and all the things. And they were texting all the time, sending letters, phone calls, video calls, all the things. For like a year and a half.
Gosh.
Well, eventually, her grandparents find a letter in her bedroom, and it's signed, like, love, Donna, you know, it's signed, your husband.
What?
And so, they're like, skrrr. So, they immediately contact the local Department of Corrections, and is like, bruh, this guy is, like, texting and calling and sending letters to our 16-year-old granddaughter and has a slew of child sex abuse material. And so the Department of Corrections is like, okay, give us the phone. And
how did he get out early?
Mm-hmm. So they're like, cool, give us the phone. And they took away like all of his privileges for like 90 days. And then he catches a charge from it. So he was charged for communication with a minor, all the things, all of the inappropriate pictures. Even after all of that, he still finds ways while he's in prison to continue to contact Caitlin. So, like, he's in prison. They took away his privileges. He gets them back, even probably before he gets them back. He's still contacting this 16-year-old. And he convinces her to make the 2-hour trip to the courthouse to try to drop the charges. And she did. And of course, they were like, the wheels of motion have already begun. Like, there's nothing we can do.
Yeah.
Plus,
but also, what?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, what?
Right. So, from this, because she wasn't successful, he started threatening her. This is where she started getting scared. She, like, dropped out of school. She quit answering his calls and texts, blocked him, all the thing, and started cooperating with the district attorney to prosecute him. But he still gets out on good behavior from the original rape charge.
That is fucking ridiculous.
And that's where people are like, well, that's the first issue with this whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, it all stems from someone who's in prison for a rape of a 16-year-old. catches a charge for having a cell phone that he's not supposed to have, which could be a charge in itself, by the way, and getting her to send pictures and him sending texts and letters and video calls and all of that. No telling where all that stuff ended up. Mm-hmm. And he catches a charge for doing the same shit with the same age group. And then you let him out on good behavior? Are right. you fucking kidding? So the biggest thing that really made police go, we got to go check this property, is because that next day, that Monday, is when the trial for Caitlin's charges were supposed to start.
Okay.
Now, this had been like 6 years because it started before he got out. And then because of COVID and all of that, it just got further and further and further. So it was like 6 years between when it was all found out and started and all of that to the trial.
And he's just living his fucking life.
Yes. The thing is, though, is that Caitlin just turned into this adult version of the badass that she is to, like, stand up to him and, like, help with the prosecution and all of that. Well, the night before this was supposed to go to trial, she gets a message on Facebook Messenger from Holly's account, and it's Jesse.
Oh, my God.
He sends a picture and says, I did exactly what I promised you I would do when I got out. I got a marketing job making great money and being advanced, been there 2 years now, and made a great life like I promised I would do with you. Now it's all gone. I told you I would not go back. This is all on you for continuing this.
Oh my God.
So she gets that and she's like, the fuck? She thinks like maybe he got fired from his job, whatever, like has no idea what he's talking about. And then he's like, he's violating his terms of his bail, because that's the other thing. When he got out of prison, see, there's so many details of the story. I'm sorry. I just feel like I'm jumping all around. So when he got out of prison, a little while later, he was charged. So they arrested him and they set his bail at like $25,000. So he was able to get out like that day, because you only have to have like, what, 10% for the bond?
I like a fine now.
And so he was able, which $2,500 is, or wait, would that be $250? What's 10% of $25,000? $2,500? That's a lot of money, but that's money that you could get from a Bell's bondman. I said that weird, but Bell bondsman, whatever the fucking name is. You could get that money versus like if it was set at $2 million, you know?
Yeah.
So it was set low enough that he was able to get out. She sends a screenshot of that to the district attorney and is like, he's contacted me. This is what he said. So that's kind of part of what got it going on, because it was only 30 minutes later that she got a call and it was the prosecutor being like, we got some bad news kind of thing. One podcast I listened to said that while the police were at the residence, though, like looking in the windows and all, like trying to see if anybody's home, that they saw some like freshly unearthed dirt, and that was like, hey, this has got to be it, you know, like this, something's bad.
Yeah,
it ended up not having anything to do with it. Y'all, I listened to 4 podcasts about this. There's so many news stories on it. I'll tell you the podcasts I listened to. I listened to United States of Murder, Serial Napper. I told y'all about one of them, and True Crime Society. So I can't remember which one of those I heard that about the dirt thing on, because they all start running together. But it's just like, what a fucking, like, I just want to punch him in his face. Like, don't blame Caitlin. Mm-hmm. You are the one that knew she was 16, asked for pictures, did all the inappropriate things, kept contacting her after you got in trouble. And then you're going to blame her because you're about to go back to prison for this?
Right.
No.
Because he's always the victim.
Exactly. Okay. So remember how I told you that the families were like able to go back into the house within a couple of days because they were like, it's no longer an active crime scene. Like, have at it.
Yeah.
There were a lot of things in this house that should have been collected, noted, something. So when you first walked in the living room, there was a twin size bed that had like a pink pattern blanket on it that they say was Tiffany's. So it's like, okay, you could argue that Tiffany's bed was in the living room because they were having a sleepover, you know?
Yeah.
But there also like wasn't enough rooms in the house for all the kids. So I don't know if maybe she slept out there, but there's so much that we're like, I don't know. There were like computers with desktop monitors hooked up all over the place, like a bunch. Okay, like four, but still, it was a lot.
That's a lot.
Yes, like four monitors with a couple of computers and all the things. Nothing I saw said this, but I believe that those computers and monitors were some sort of security system, because it's come out more that Jesse was like really kept tabs on where Holly and the kids were.
Well, and also they had like 100 acres, right?
Yeah, but I think it was more.
I mean, I get like it was more about that, but I'm just saying like it could have been started as,
yeah,
you know, just needing, yeah, to have it wherever. Or that's how he told it to them.
Well, right off the living room was a bedroom, and the bed frame had restraints bolted into it.
Oh, fuck.
The restraints still had chains attached.
God.
Now.
So, like, if they're bolted into it, that had to be there before this whole thing went down. So, did Holly not know?
Well, okay, I'm going to kind of jump ahead a little bit. Okay. And then I'll go back to telling you, like, what all they found. There was, like, a News 4 that followed the family into this house and, like, got all of this footage. Ooh. Of this. Okay, so Holly knew that he had been to prison for the rape.
Yeah.
But he played it off, blah, blah, blah. Holly's parents come out and they say that a couple of months before all this happened, they had been online looking at, like, her and her husband, Holly's dad, had been online looking for, like, one of his coworkers that had gotten arrested. Like, oh, what'd Johnny do? Let me go to the jail docket, blah, blah, blah. And they found Jesse's stuff, like that he was a registered sex offender and all that. They had no fucking idea. So they confronted Holly, like, do you know this, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, it's just a misunderstanding, yada, yada, yada. I don't know if she knew about Caitlin or not. There's a lot we don't know.
No, I mean, did she know about the,
well,
the restraints and stuff?
Well, and that's what she had to have.
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, let me show you this picture.
Now, also, if y'all have that in your bedroom, that's fine. But it seems, well, like, is, it's,
yes,
the not their stuff.
Well, this is a little bit different because this is like a board attached to the wall with like eyelet hooks in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is like serial killer bondage style, not
like dungeon.
Yes.
Like for real, not a sex dungeon.
So I don't know if maybe that was part of their sexual, because I also don't know which bedroom was theirs.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know if maybe that was part of their sexual relationship, which is, again, totally fine. You're consenting adults. But this shit was all over the fucking house. And you have three teenagers living with you, two of which are teenage girls. And it's just fucking highly inappropriate, the more you'll hear. Like, this is not just, like, this is the bedroom right off the living room where,
yeah,
like, this is not, we have a sex room or even our bedroom where we can hide stuff from our children. Like, this is not that.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen the beds where you can, like, unfold and fold the, where you put your handcuffs and all.
Yeah.
You know, if you are into that, by all means. But I don't know, this, it just is, it's too much. So, I don't know why, but this part, I'm just like, okay. But it's like, everything said there was a shelf lined with witchcraft-related books. Whatever the fuck that means. But in the kitchen, there was a bolt for restraints with like fresh locks and chains attached to it in the countertop.
Oh, fuck.
So I don't know if this was something new because he was like going out in a blaze of glory.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, Brittany and Ivy were sexually assaulted. So I don't know if some of this was like new stuff that he had been planning, like, okay, I'm going to put this in the wall in this bedroom. Or was he doing this to Holly and her girls? We don't know. That's why I'm wondering, like, was he sexually assaulting Riley? And that's why Riley was with Brittany and Ivy and Tiffany wasn't.
Mm.
Because Tiffany was a little younger and Riley was 17. Like, was that his like age preference? I know this is disgusting, but like,
yeah,
is that why she was with those girls? But I never saw anything that said that Riley was sexually assaulted. So I don't know. This is, that's all pure conjecture. And really, I mean, it matters because her story needs to be told, but in the grand scheme of things, that part doesn't matter. Unless, we'll get to that in a minute. So the house was just gross. Like in the kitchen, there were those sticky pads for insects with like all mm-hmm. kinds of R words, and some stuff said mice too. Like, there was a dog collar, but like they didn't have a dog. So, you know, it was for something sexual. So again, was it consensual or not? There were a lot of handcuffs and just sex toys and all of that and lube everywhere. And so that's the other thing too. Like, it's not like, okay, if that was their bedroom where they did their bondage stuff and all of that, the lube, the toys, all of that should be in there. No, this was like in the fucking living room. Like there was, and this, the pictures too, like these were used bottles of lube. Like this was not just like, oh, let me, you know, new.
Yeah.
Now, there was a ton of drug paraphernalia found. Like there was even a syringe still filled with like a dark color. I don't know what that is. Some stuff said it was heroin, but I don't fucking know anything. Mm-mm. But nothing ever actually said. Like on some podcasts, they speculate like that's probably heroin, but fuck if I know what heroin looks like. There was, like they said, like white powder. So I'm assuming cocaine just out. Like, and that's the thing too. Like this is not an active crime scene anymore. So you're just letting the parents of these victims come through with a goddamn news crew and you've got syringes of drugs still out. Are you fucking kidding me?
Right.
With all of this stuff just still in the house. So they found a check that was signed by Holly for a storage unit and it had the unit number on it. And they were like, y'all gonna go check this unit out? Like, what's in there? Like, because that's the thing too. They checked nothing out. Like they didn't take the computers. They didn't have the kids' phones. They didn't have his phone. They didn't have all this stuff. So who knows where all of these pictures and stuff that he has, who knows where the fuck that ended up on the dark web. If he was doing all of this, like raping the girls and doing all that and then going to kill them and then kill himself, there's no telling what he videoed and uploaded and all of that. And it's like, they just stopped the investigation. It's like, yes, we know the perpetrator is dead, but there could be a lot more.
Right.
Like you could be catching God knows how many people downloading these fucking images.
Right. And there could be other victims.
Well, we'll get there. So they had gone, you know, the family's just like looking through and they go into like the laundry room, open a cabinet and find all of their fucking cell phones just in the cabinet. So the police had never even opened a fucking cabinet to be like, oh, here's Brittany and Ivy's cell phones.
Wow.
Maybe we should check this. Check it for fingerprint. Anything. Check his phone. Anything. They just were like, here. Somebody handed the dad a bag to be like, grab her phone so you don't get fingerprints on it. He's like, no, look at this bag. It's a bag with brand new receipts for all the new chains and locks in the kitchen.
Oh my
so like
God.
That was new that he so who knows how long he kept them hostage that day because I think it was Ivy's mom. I'm so sorry that I'm maybe mixing that up, but I think it was Ivy's mom that got the message that next morning to say, hey, we're going to go to this ranch, that she was like, well, that didn't really sound like her, but who knows, they were probably talking and she just texts weird, you know. So they think that maybe that was actually Jesse texting from her phone. So who knows? This shit could have started at midnight on Saturday and he kept them all day chained up acting as, you know, slaves or whatever, you know, his sex slaves. You never fucking know. So it's like, let's learn these girls' stories. Like, let's put these pieces together and give them a voice for the voiceless.
Right.
And the family's like, so you're not going to try to get footage of him buying this stuff or, I mean, you know? And Justin, who's Ivy's dad, was like, he's like on this, because this is like a video, calling the sheriff's department. And he's like, my daughter was locked up right here, right here. And they're basically like, the investigators are like, I don't know what you want me to do. This is a closed case. Basically, like, it's not my job. I don't know what you want me to do.
Wow.
They did take some stuff. And then the family...
But that's the thing. They took some stuff, but left the plethora of other things. And why would you leave all of the sex stuff there and be like, yeah, go ahead. Get your stuff.
The syringe of drugs.
Yeah.
Like, if anything, take that to fucking destroy it, you know?
And the white substance.
Right. Okay. They did find this really weird thing. They found a list of names with birth dates. And so they, the family, Ivy's family, believes that it's like a list of victims' names. I don't know who all's name is on it, but I know the family's name was on it. So it's also like, what happened to that list? So like, who are those other people? Are those other victims of his? They found a wet wipe that was covered in blood. Whose blood is that? Is there another victim out there?
Yeah.
They found more phones in a closet. Whose phones are those? Are they other victims? The family went to the house three different times and found more evidence each and every time.
Wow.
One of the, I think it was an aunt, like moved a dresser out and found restraints taped to the back of the dresser.
Holy fuck.
So it's like, was that maybe their sex stuff? And then the rest of the stuff he had just added, like, this is now, like, they're his sex slaves now, like, almost like the Ariel Castro of it all. Like, he was keeping them there that weekend. Yeah. And so that stuff was new, but maybe, or was that from a trophy from another victim? Like,
yeah.
We don't know, because you know what they told her? They said, you can either have it or you can throw it away, because wow. We don't want it.
Wow. This is kind of reminding me of that case where I think it was like two people that went over to a friend's house to have a birthday party or something. Mm-hmm. And they were all killed. And the police were like, oh, we found like one person. And then the family went to the wreckage and found actual bodies.
Yeah.
That just makes me so mad that they were so nonchalant about that.
Well, they found more pictures. And so it's like, okay, who was on the pictures? Like,
right.
So these are victims too. Like, are we, I don't know who was on the pictures. Nothing ever said, but it's like, are those, was it of maybe Holly's kids? We don't know. Was it of somebody else? And is that another victim that we need to see? Ugh. Like, where did he get these pictures? Are you going to uncover some fucking Josh Duggar picture ring on the fucking dark web if you would just dig into this?
Right.
The biggest thing that I'm like, what is that under a floorboard? They found bloodstained children's clothes, like for a toddler, they said.
Oh, God.
So it's like, whose fucking clothes are that? Whose blood's on it?
Ugh.
Whose clothes are that? Is there another victim?
Yeah, that made like a shiver went up my body on that. That's how do you not? Oh, my gosh.
Like they put those clothes in a bag to give to investigators. So that they could figure it out. Because they're like, well, I mean, just throw it away. It's like, that's the biggest thing to, like, take the fact away that they fucked up and he never should have gotten out of prison ever, but much less early, because he should have been in prison. What should have happened is he caught that other charge. While he's serving that sentence, he went to trial and sentenced for that one too. And mm-hmm. then he just, because he would have gotten like 20 years to life for that. So he would have never gotten out of prison. But let's take that fuck up off the table. He had to go do check-ins for his, like, probation, for getting out early. Just had to go and, like, sign a paper at the police station. There weren't, like, home check-ins, all of that. So, like, did they give him drug tests? Or was this drugs, like, just the bender of the weekend that he decided to kill everyone and die by suicide? Like, was he doing drugs this whole time? Like, what was going on, you know? And yeah. So it's like, so were they doing drug tests? Were they not? Like, so that all is a failure because nobody knew he was on the registry. That should have been known that he was on a sex offender registry. And I think he should not have been able to live with her with kids under the age of 18.
Yeah.
Now, some stuff said that, like, some of the podcasts I was listening to said that basically, like, as long as the parent agrees, it's fine. But, okay, well, what about the dad? Because Tiffany's dad is the only one that was in the picture, and he had no idea that Jesse was a registered sex offender. Like, he was like, you know how he found out that his daughter had died? Facebook.
What?
Yes. Completely separate of this, a neighbor had said that they had seen Jesse digging at the pond 6 months ago and did like work there for about a month. But he said he was expanding the pond. So like, what's down there? They say that the police did dive and use sonar a few days after the murder, but they didn't find anything of relevance. So they just took down the crime scene tape. So I'm like, what the fuck did he put in that pond?
Right.
So the sheriff's office and the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation really has come under fire for this case. And people are pissed. And the families want fucking answers. Because even one, there was a guy named James Fleming that was one of Jesse McFadden's cellmates. And he was like, that man should have never been released. He had gone as far to contact the Henrietta Police Department to say, like, look, he's really dangerous. Like, you need to watch him.
The shit he had to say for his cellmate to say that.
Yes, because I think that cellmate actually had dated Holly before and had even reached out to her, like, girl, you good? Like, just checking in on you. Like, he's bad news. You good? So the families are really petitioning for stricter sentencing, taking away early releases for sex offenders, and they're really working to stop registered sex offenders from having such access to kids and all. And, you know, look, we're never going to have all the answers what happened. I understand why the police were like, we have, like, we know who did it. Like, I can get them not wanting to spend a bunch of resources in trying to figure out who killed them. Like, we know who killed them. But also, this leads to other things. Like, there have to be other victims.
Mm-hmm.
There's no shot that there's not. Because, again, I want to know, well, I don't personally want to know, but I want police to know, who were the kids in those pictures that they found?
Mm-hmm.
And do they and their parents even know that their pictures are out there?
Right.
Or were they in some situation where they've been trafficked and we need to find them? And, you know, like,
yeah,
all this stuff, like, it just lends itself to an endless minefield of victims.
Right.
And the number of perpetrators you could potentially catch that are involved in exchanging child sexual abuse material. So, I don't know. This story pissed me right the fuck off.
Yeah.
It's a really recent story for me to do. Y'all know I don't really do a lot of, like, super, super recent ones. I just feel like this needs to get out because people need to be held accountable for him being released when he has a pending trial for the same thing. Like,
yeah.
I don't. There has to be some accountability held for something, even if it's the accountability is just changes in the laws. Because what's done is done. We can't bring these poor babies back, but can we stop it from happening again if we change the laws around sex offenders and their release? And what happens if they get in trouble when he's clearly not on good behavior? Like, you let him out for 3 years off for good behavior, and he was not behaved.
Right. Also, this just goes to show you that the people that you said don't allow their kids to go over and spend the night at people's houses, it's for a reason.
Well, and these, you know, Brittany and Ivy were both pretty fucking close to their parents. Like I said, they're Snapchatting them, they're keeping in touch and all of that. And it's like, Tiffany had come spend the night at their house too. So it's like, had they even seen anything before? I don't know. Had they been groomed up to a point? I don't know. Did he just snap on that weekend and had never done anything to those girls before? And he just snapped that weekend because his trial was upcoming and he was like, I'm not going back? I don't know. But the amount of things that I hid from my parents as a teenager, I don't care how much you or how well you know your kids, they're hiding something from you.
Yeah.
Now, do I think you need to go read every single one of their text messages? No. Do I blame these parents for having sent their kids to this house? No.
No.
Because,
yeah, no one's a problem besides Jesse here.
Yes. I don't know. This was just a heartbreaking story.
It was.
That I was like, at first, I was like, this isn't going to be a very long story because, like, it's new. You know, how much fucking is there? And then it was just like, it grew and grew and grew. And I was like, oh, my God.
This was a terrible but great recommendation. Like, terrible story, great recommendation, because I did not know this.
Well, and there's just so much we can learn from it because, again, our justice system is flawed and we have to make steps to fix it, you know? And if we're going to have a sex offender registry, there needs to be better things about it. Like, let's say that Holly was cool with Tiffany living under the same roof with a sex offender. Okay, but was her biological dad?
Right.
Because he needed to sign off on that too.
Yeah.
But then that brings about, well, what if their biological dad's not in the picture? Well, okay, well, let's give them a certain amount of time to respond. And if they don't, then, you know, whatever. But yeah, like, we got to do our due diligence. But also, that speaks to systems that are overrun, overworked, understaffed, underpaid, under all the things, yeah, under all the pressure. And it's like you're already taxing an overtaxed system. So it's like there's so many issues.
Yeah.
Well, y'all let us know what you think. I know these stories were hard to hear, even Donna's.
I know.
Jesus. But for real, thank y'all so much for listening and sending us these recommendations and supporting us. There's tons of ways you can support us, even if you can't support us on Patreon, which we totally understand. You can always, word of mouth is the best. You can always like, subscribe, review, all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
You eat well, you work out, but did you know 99% of Americans are still mineral deficient? That's where Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder comes in. It's your daily foundation for better mood, natural energy, immune support, and nervous system balance. Formulated from nature and backed by science, it's a simple habit that makes a big impact. Because your body doesn't make minerals, and today's food and water don't supply enough, with Concentrace, you'll feel the difference. Go to TraceMinerals.com and start with minerals. Start with Concentrace.